comicbook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, January 9th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we'll try to push through those midweek blues here with a pretty good edition of the show. First guest, Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. We're going to chat about these four NFL playoff games for the divisional round. If there's time at the end of the segment, we'll talk about the MLB season win total numbers that Caesars Palace came out with yesterday. But again, that will be time permitting there. Want to make sure that we spend enough time on these NFL games. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds will join us at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. We'll chat about the dog days of winter in the NBA here. See if there's some value on some underdogs or see if the favorites just continue to do what we know the NBA to do. We'll also talk college basketball with conference play and then the Sony Open out in Hawaii, this week's golf tournament. We'll chat about that with Wes as well. Over at BetShop for sports betting news and information, daily college basketball picks from Kyle Hunter. That article should be posted here around lunchtime today. Parker Michaels has already put up his NHL article with a very limited number of games tonight, so you can check that out over there as well. All four of these NFL divisional round playoff games have been previewed. The golf tournament this weekend has been previewed. We've got daily college basketball and NBA content. And, of course, I'm working hard now on my Major League Baseball stuff. So lots going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check it out. Get involved in our free pick contests to win some cash prizes. Check out our sportsbook reviews as well. And as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is the promo code. 100% deposit match bonus up to $500 for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus up to $500 for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We'll kick things off with our leadoff hitter. That is Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Baseball season wins out now, and you just never get ahead in this industry.
No, you really can't. And it's crazy. I mean, we know that these seasons are 365 days for these teams because of transactions and the off season and signing guys and all that type of stuff. But damn it, man, all these sports are 365 days a year in the sports betting industry now too.
It definitely is. And I started working on baseball a couple days ago, figured I'd get a head start, and all of a sudden, Caesars puts out season wins. So, yeah, we'll have to deal with it as we go, and we'll see if anybody copies or if there's any changes from that. But it's actually good to get out early because it gets people excited about baseball. And as you know, I travel to spring training every year, and that's 2 months away. So, now that college football's ended, we get to the end of the NFL, and we can spend more time with the other sports. And, it's a never-ending grind when you're betting for a living.
Well, and that's a very cruel twist of fate. I was talking about this with you before the show. You know, living here in the Cleveland area, it's January. You know, we expect cold, we expect snow, we expect miserable. Yesterday, thunderstorms, tornadoes, 60 degrees, felt like a springtime kind of day. These MLB season win total odds come out. I start thinking spring. I'm digging into baseball quite a bit now as well. Then today it's snowing. So, you know, it's crazy to think that, you know, it's the middle of not even the middle of January, and MLB season win total odds are out already. Credit to Jeff Davis and Matt Lindemann over at Caesars for putting those out, but just it is insane to me how much earlier and earlier these seasons begin for us.
Well, from the sports betting standpoint, from the sports books, they're just trying to get some publicity. And if you can beat the next person to getting the lines out, I know the Golden Nugget got a lot of publicity a few years ago for putting those out earlier, and then all of a sudden Chris Andrews gets a job over at South Point, and then South Point did their best to get in front of that. And Matt's we both know Matt, you're friends with Matt, and that's a guy he's a go-getter, and he started at Caesars, and there's been a few things he's done that have been ahead of the curve, and he's been pretty innovative. I've been very happy for him. It's nice to see a good guy going out there and making a name for himself, and now we just got to go in there and try to beat him on.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, I mean, we'll do some more baseball stuff here as we get closer. I know I had some people reaching out on Twitter yesterday and asking when I'm going to start with the baseball. The Bettors Box podcast, the standalone MLB podcast that I do twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. That'll start here in the month of April, but obviously we'll try to work in as much baseball as we can as we get closer to the season here. But speaking of seasons and them starting, we had one wrap up on Monday night with college football coming to a close, Clemson blowing out Alabama in the national championship game. Brian, I ask all of my guests this, so I want to ask you this here on today's show. Looking back at your college football season, what do you feel like was really successful for you? What do you feel like you did a very good job of this year?
I didn't have a good college football season. I actually lost money this college football season, and that's the first time I can remember that. Usually that's one of the highlights of my year is college football. So I don't know if I have an answer for that because I've been very disappointed. I didn't pull the trigger on a lot of games. I like Clemson, but I wanted the six, so I didn't play it. The bowl season was very good, so usually I don't do very well in the bowls. So hopefully that's turning into something that I can build on for next year. But basically, it was just a situation where I just couldn't get my hold on the teams, and a lot of it had to do with the MAC. Usually I tear up the MAC, but I lost in the MAC this year, which is just mind blowing for me. So, you know, when you can't win in your best conference, you're not going to have a good football season. And so I got to go back and do some more work. What I did go back and do after the season was go back and make game grades for every game. So, I've noticed if a team wins on the game grade and they looked bad with the final score, the following week, that was a team that would have some value on it. So I went back and I back-tested that, and that worked out really well this year. So that's something I'm going to keep in mind next year and obviously go off less of the final score and check into more of the turnovers. And it was one of those years where, you know, turnovers usually balance out a little bit, but it seemed like every team I bet on had the worst turnover day. And those things are going to happen. Anytime you're betting and the team turns the ball over, you're not going to have a very good chance of winning. And since they play a lot of underdogs, you know, usually I lose a turnover battle. But even the favorites this year, that didn't work out for me. So it's a learning experience. I've tried to make some adjustments already, and I'll do more as the year approaches. But I'm looking to get a big head start on college football next year because of what happened this year.
Well, you kind of touched on it a little bit already, because the follow-up question, the obvious follow-up question is, you know, what are you going to look to incorporate? What are you going to look to do a little bit more the next season? But I want to ask you about something different here. You mentioned that you liked Clemson in the national championship game, wanted to get a six, never popped up, so you never wound up playing the game. I have to ask, and this is a very deep and detailed discussion. This is something we would probably need an entire segment on, so maybe that's something we can do either later here in the spring or, you know, sometime over the off season. But do you feel like sometimes people can get two numbers obsessed? I mean, obviously you want to get the best number that you possibly can, but when you look overall at the grand scheme of things, the percentage of times that the number actually matters in terms of, you know, the underdog covering but not winning the game outright, or the favorite winning and not covering, something like that, is pretty small overall. Now, I do like to say on this show that the number doesn't matter until it does, which is kind of the way that, you know, I sort of operate, because you're going to have times where you get middle on a game or get a bad number or something like that. But do you feel like maybe you are a little bit too focused on getting the best number at times?
I would say yes. Early in the week, for example, if there's a game that came out Sunday and I missed the line, I could have gotten a plus 10, and now I'm seeing an 8 out there, it does have an effect on me that I could have had the 10. Now I'm looking to play an 8. Obviously, 10 works out a little bit better, and the percentages are a little bit better. But it is a little frustrating that I'm missing numbers. But I think unless you place a hard cap on whatever number you're willing to take, you're going to start taking a bunch of games that are borderline profitable. And to me, that game was sitting at 8, 8.5, 7.5 earlier from these people that put out games there and that kind of thing. And then it was down at 5, 5.5. And I said, you know what? I said, that's not what I want here. And to be totally honest with you, since I sell plays, I don't want people thinking just because it's a national championship game, I'm going to force a play. I put out the same games to my clients as I bet. I bet a few more just because I don't have the time to do all the write-ups for them. But if your guy is putting out a play, if you're following somebody, they're putting out a play on every single playoff game, every single bowl game, chances are they're not looking to make money for you. They're looking for sales, and I don't want to be that guy. So I have to have a set number that I make, and I'll say, okay, based on this information, I need to have the six. Obviously, you know, they have some guys suspended, instead, especially the linemen. Now, that probably was worth a point. But it was something that I really didn't have a big feel on the game, because as we've talked about all season long, I had Alabama rated as the highest rated team in my power ratings all season long. And now they played one bad game, and they're going to be discounted next year. In fact, going into the championship game, there was lines out on who would win the championship next year, and Alabama was the favorite. And Clemson wins this game, and now all of a sudden Clemson is the favorite. Clemson did look very good in that game. I've watched every Clemson game all season long. That was the best they played all season. Alabama, to be honest, had some bad coaching in that game. I couldn't understand some of the coaching moves. You're running the ball right down their throat all game. You're tiring them out, and you just got away from it. And, you know, he tried to be too smart by passing when Alabama's the team that runs the ball down your throat, and they were having success. So, you know, a lot of people are going to discount Alabama based on what they saw last. And who knows, for one time, maybe starting the next year, we might get some value in Alabama.
All right, so let's transition into these NFL games here for the divisional round. We'll start with the first game on the board, 301-302, Indianapolis, Kansas City. Kansas City up from 4 to 5.5. And this is sort of what I was getting at with my question here, Brian, is, you know, that four number that was out there early in the week was gone very, very quickly. You know, and it wasn't available at all shops anyway. It was available at Bookmaker, and it moved very quickly to 4.5 and then on up into 5 and that type of thing. But I feel like there's kind of a little bit of paralysis there in terms of seeing that the opener was 4, now seeing that it's 5.5, and maybe this one gets to 6. It already has gotten to 6. It's come back down a little bit more. But I think there's this paralysis out there from a lot of people to say, well, I didn't get -4. I'm not going to play -5.5, even though I do like Kansas City in this game. I think some people do kind of scare themselves off of numbers a little bit, you know, because they see what an opener was or what an early line was, when the reality is, and the fact of the matter is, very few people got that 4.
Yeah, definitely. And 4.5, 5, 5.5 are all dead numbers. So it's not as much of a worry. I agree. I think we do hit 6 again on this. So if you like Indy, you'll see that again. And the reason I say that is we've got a Kansas City team who had the week off. We all know Andy Reid is terrific having a week off. We've got a rested Kansas City team, and usually a team coming off of a bye is worth a couple of points. You've got Kansas City having one of the two best home field advantages, and you've got an Indianapolis team right now who is red hot, and the public likes to bet the teams that are red hot. And to be honest with you, the underdogs, I think, have hit like 14 out of 15 in the NFL playoffs going back to last year. So there's a lot of reasons why people like the underdogs here, because they're on a roll. But everything is totally a different game. I discount that situation. To me, I've always liked to play the favorites in week 2 because, number one, they're the better team. They've got the extra week off, and the other team had to play the following week and got banged up. So my first look at all these games is I'm looking to fade the current narrative of the underdogs because the underdogs have been hot. And I think, you know, overall, you're getting some pretty cheap numbers on the favorite when you actually break down the game from a power rating standpoint and from the buy standpoint and also the standpoint of playing at home. New Orleans has got a terrific home field advantage. New England at this time of year is very tough to beat. I don't know the exact number, but New England in the playoffs playing at home has just been tremendous. Obviously, they don't have quite the team they've had in the past. The Rams may be the one team where you look at it and you say, you know what, I think that team could be beat. Kansas City. You know, people have looked at this Indy-Kansas City game, and they all talk about how good Indy's defense has been. Well, you go back to the first six games, of the five, six games of the season when they were really injured, they were bad. But once they got all their guys back, they had a really good defense. But go back and look at the strength of schedule they played against opposing offenses. They played the easiest slate of offenses all season long. They end the year playing Tennessee with a backup quarterback. Last week they play Houston without two of their best receivers. They've been very lucky when it's come to that defense, and that's which is one of the reasons why I'm leaning with the over here. We're seeing 57s pretty much across the board. Kansas City's going to move the ball on this Indy defense. This isn't, you're not going to see the same Indy defense that you saw the last 2 weeks against faulty offenses. This Kansas City team can put points on the board against anybody. This is going to be a track meet, and 57, I think, at this point, is a little bit cheap.
Well, one of the things I talked about last week with Brad Powers was, you know, looking at that Indianapolis-Houston game, yeah, Indianapolis wound up closing a one-point dog or, you know, in that range, but that was a number of three at open. And with Indianapolis having 1-9, being so hot with Andrew Luck, the defense, a young defense really improving throughout the season, you know, that opening number was still three. And the market moved it down, and correctly, obviously, with the way that the game played out. But then you look at this one here, you notice Indianapolis, who opened a three-point dog on the road at Houston, only opens a four-point dog in Kansas City here. So it seemed like last week, maybe there wasn't as much respect for the Colts in that opening number. This week, there was too much respect for the Colts on that opening number. And again, when it comes to this business, you want to treat these teams as stocks. You want to buy low and sell high. And judging by the two openers for the Colts games here in the playoffs, fading the Colts this week is selling high. And I think that's why we've seen this line move the way it has.
Yeah, and the three last week with Houston, I give the Linesmakers a lot of credit, but that was a bad line. There's no way you knew that Indy was a team that was going to take money going into that game. Houston had their streak. They had their game winning streak or whatever it was. But I could find fault in that winning streak because of the teams they played. They played a lot of teams with a lot of injuries, entering quarterbacks and that kind of thing. So Indy was the team. Going into the game last week, I don't think you can make a case that Houston was the better team, which even, you know, even if you say Houston's an equal team, that would be the three. I never saw it. I always thought that Indy was the better team. Never thought it'd get to the point where Indy was favored. What I did was I teased Indy last week because I didn't get the full three, but I took it over seven, made it to eight, I believe. But that was just a bad line. I'm not sure this was a bad line. Like you said, the four wasn't there long, so I don't even worry about it. But if you like Kansas City, I would have to think that you got to get in now. There's going to be a lot of Indy backers, but Kansas City playing at home, I think there's going to be a lot of big money once they open up Thursday with a higher limit. People who do their own power ratings will have Kansas City as a play at under six.
Yeah, and for Kansas City here, certainly taking some sharp money early in the week. We did see that point of resistance at six, but, you know, keep in mind here, yeah, Indianapolis is a pretty public team with how well they've been playing, 10 of their last 11, Andrew Luck. But Kansas City with Pat Mahomes, sexy offenses get public money as well. So, you know, the public may be a little bit more split on this game than it was last week with Indianapolis, you know, pretty much taking one side action all the way up until game day when some people just said, you know what, everyone's on Indianapolis. Maybe I'll give Houston a try. That certainly didn't work out. How about the late game on Saturday here? Dallas and the Rams. Rams, 7-point favorite. A lot of extra juice out there, minus $1.15. My bookie, the only one I'm seeing offshore right now, dealing 7 flat on this game, minus 110. You mentioned that you think the Rams could be a little bit vulnerable this week?
Well, I think out of the four teams, they could be vulnerable because they haven't played well. And I do want to make a point on something before I get to this game. Another thing about the teams being 14-1 or whatever for the underdogs, all the teams that are underdogs are on a nice – had a winning streak right now. Indy, as you said, has been killing it. Dallas has played a lot better ball lately. The Chargers have been a nice money maker, and obviously Philadelphia has surprised some people. But all the home teams Kansas City hasn't performed well the second half of the season against the spread. The Rams have been weak against the spread all season long. New England hasn't been their normal moneymaker, or New Orleans started the year well, but have not played up to capabilities lately. So if you're a guy who has made money or lost money lately and tends to continue to play on that team, you're going to find more money coming in on these underdogs here. But, you know, the thing that concerns me with Dallas is I don't believe they're very good at throwing the ball down the field. And the Rams have a tremendous pass rush, which means Dallas is going to have to throw in the short passes to the running back, which is what you're supposed to do, and they're going to have to run the football, and Ezekiel Elliott is a great runner. But it's going to make Dallas, anytime they're on offense, it's going to take them a long time to get down the field and score. You're not going to have too many explosive plays out of Dallas, whereas the Rams have that explosive play capability. Ever since Cooper Kupp's been injured, they have not had the same capability. I don't know if that's Cooper Kupp's a good player. He's not a great player, so I don't know if that's just happened to be the way that worked out. But, the Rams playing at home, I like the Rams. I actually used them as a teaser earlier, so they basically just have to win. But Dallas is a team. Anytime you've got a team that can run the football and keep the opponent off the field, I think you've got a chance in these games, and Dallas has that ability. I still like the Rams. I don't want to lay the 7 with the Rams. I don't trust them to lay the 7, but I do feel they'll win the game. But this is the one game where I somewhat lean with the dog.
Well, of course, you mentioned Dallas, a pretty proficient rushing attack. Rams 32nd in the NFL in yards per carry allowed. So that certainly doesn't help, especially when you're looking to cover a big 7-point number here. There is a big coaching mismatch in this game, once again, for Dallas. There was a coaching mismatch last week, and then Brian Schottenheimer really, kind of neutralized that for Seattle. Much bigger coaching mismatch here with Sean McVay and the coaching staff that he has. So we'll see if Dallas has the right scheme. And, again, that's something that opens live betting up for this game. Look and see how Dallas looks. Look and see what the game plan is, and then you can decide from that point forward if they're going to have success or if the Rams are, going to just kind of lean on them a little bit until they fall.
Speaking of live betting, that Indy-Kansas City game would be a terrific game. Anytime you can get a game that can go both ways offensively, where a team will take a 10, 14-point lead, based how you think the game looks, you can get some pretty nice lines and catch yourself up with catching plus money on both sides. So that's a game I always like. Anytime there's a high-scoring game, your Baylor's, West Virginia games in college football, that kind of thing. We don't do enough talking about in-game betting. We did a video last week on it at Wager Talk, but there's so many different ways to make money. And you talked about missing out on numbers. That's what a lot of guys do. They got a team and they didn't get the number they wanted. I was lucky to play Clemson in that national championship, but I thought Alabama, which had a habit of scoring first, would cut down a score, and that I could get a better number on Clemson. Well, Clemson picks that game off, and all of a sudden they're up 7-0. I never got that chance to bet into Clemson, but the worst thing that happens is you walk away and you don't have a bet. And but live betting is really for these games that everybody has the ability to play the live betting, and there's a lot of different odds from different sports books. It's definitely the way to go.
All right, let's go to Sunday afternoon here, or Sunday morning, as it were, for the Los Angeles Chargers. Second straight game cross-country, second straight early kickoff on Sunday for them, third straight road game they played in Denver in Week 17. So obviously a lot of things from a spot standpoint going against the Los Angeles Chargers here, and yet this number has gone down from 5 or 4.5 to 4. What do you make of that, Brian?
Yeah, we're seeing 62% of the bets on the Chargers. The only way I could look to play this one would be New England because of the spot, as you pointed out. The weather doesn't look to be quite as bad as it was earlier in the week. You were talking snow. I don't think that's going to be a factor here, but you talk about the coaching advantage. Well, you've got it right here again, as the Chargers made a lot of negative coaching moves late in games, and that's hurt them on the season. And you got the best coach Hall of Fame coach in New England who's been there before. Nobody's talking about New England right now, and I understand why the team hasn't played as well this year. Their key players have had injuries. They don't have the big-name players. Well, New England's a team who always picks players off a scrap heap that nobody else wants, plugs them into the system, and they could do what New England wants them to do. And you're looking at a four here. And, you know, I already talked about the having a bye, the value of a bye. Let's just say 2 points, just round it off for 2 points. New England, with all the success that they've had in the playoffs and at this time of the year, you'd have to give them at least 2.5, which would be 4.5 points there. And then you add in the Chargers, the way they've got to travel back and forth, and yet you're laying less than that number. You're not charging them anything, as a little pun, or no pun intended there, on the travel situation. So, you know, in reality, this line should probably be 5.5, and now we're getting it at 4. The only way I could look here would be New England. Obviously, we've seen the stats on Brady against the San Diego quarterback, and, you know, Brady's dominated. I happen to think this Chargers team is better than some of the others, and New England's team isn't quite as good. But still, New England is the biggest moneymaker in the NFL day in and day out. They're the most public team, and yet they continue to make money for their backers. You're going to have to force me to play the Chargers in this game because I've seen this too many times out of New England.
Yeah, I mean, if this goes down to 3.5, I'll take a pregame position. If it doesn't, I'll kind of wait this one out and maybe take New England's second half or something like that. Because for the Chargers, I mean, there has to be fatigue here at some point. There just has to be. Talking about 3 straight road games, 1 in altitude, 2 cross-country trips. You know, Phillip Rivers isn't a spring chicken by any means. You know, they've had some injuries on the defensive side of the ball this year. Somebody's got to be getting tired on this team. It just has to be happening. And you know, I kind of wonder about the fourth quarter for the Chargers against Baltimore there. I know they went into the prevent defense, but, you know, was that fatigue? Was that managing yourself knowing that you have to play again on the road the next week? Was that a sign of something to come? I'm not sure. You know, obviously I'd like to think that it was just because of the scheme and because, you know, they had the game well in hand that they were giving up big chunks of yards. But I kind of wonder if, you know, maybe there is a little bit of fatigue creeping in there. And you've got to think, somebody as smart as Bill Belichick, they're going to go with a little bit more tempo in this game. They're going to do a lot of things to try and stretch the Chargers out sideline to sideline with Sony Michel and with throwing the football. I feel like I'm going to have New England in the second half of this game if everything sets up well. And I may end up talking myself into a pregame position as well.
Well, New England's always deferred when they win the coin toss. So the Chargers, if it works out that way, the Chargers get the ball first. You know, maybe the Chargers get a score on that first drive. They get a touchdown, and all of a sudden we can get New England less than 3 in the game. That would be something that I'd definitely look for.
All right, one more game to talk about here in the divisional round. Philadelphia and New Orleans, Eagles versus Saints. Saints an 8-point favorite here in this one. Total of 50 on this game. Brian, what do you think about this matchup?
I had Philadelphia as a free play last week. If I could have gotten the 7, it would have made my card. Didn't happen. Stuck with the 6.5. Bet it. Gave it out as a free play. And I liked the Philadelphia part all day long. You had a second-year quarterback in Chicago, rookie coach in Chicago, and you had a Philadelphia team that had gone to the Super Bowl the previous year, a lot of veterans. I thought that was a team in Philadelphia that was underrated, Chicago being a little bit overrated, and it worked out well. I didn't expect Philadelphia to win the game outright, but that sets us up pretty well here because now we're seeing 63% of the bets on Philadelphia. People started to buy into Philadelphia and Nick Foles. And granted, I give Nick Foles all the credit in the world. It's a nice story. A lot of times coming into the playoffs here, you get a lot of narratives. One of them is Indianapolis. One of them is the L.A. Chargers. I knew I was going to say it. But another one is Philadelphia here, and you're getting a team that pulled off the upset on the road last week in a cold weather city, just like Philadelphia. Now they have to travel, and they have to face New Orleans in a dome, a fast track in a dome. Philadelphia we all know the injuries they have in the defensive backfield, and New Orleans has the team that throws the ball, has more success throwing the ball downfield than anybody in the NFL, than Kansas City. And Drew Brees at home in that game, we've seen anytime New Orleans is at home in a Monday Night Football game, a primetime game, you get a huge home field advantage. And I really like New Orleans here with the extra time to prepare. The coach has been very good off of buys and with extra time to prepare in the past. Philadelphia was the team I was on last week, and sometimes you've got to realize that maybe you were a little bit lucky in that situation. I'll take the win and I'll walk away, and I'll play the Saints on this one. Is you're getting the team with the extra rest with the bye week, and I think that's very important because of where they're playing. The Saints, it's going to be tough for anybody to beat the Saints. The Rams do have that ability because of their fast-paced offense to try to match the points with the Saints. But other than that, the Saints are the team to beat, and obviously the line tells you that.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Brian?
Back to videos today. Showtime will actually be in on our videos today. Kelly Vegas is there, and anytime you get a good-looking woman who knows a little bit about sports, they want to know about it, and Kelly's taking part in a sports handicapping or a sports – I'll take a look at sports betting in Las Vegas. Showtime is putting – I don't know if it's just a one-time thing or if it's a series at all, but they'll be there today. So, looking forward to actually maybe dressing up a little bit, but my dressing up is just wearing a clean shirt, so we'll have to see how it goes.
Well, you can follow Brian's work on Twitter at BLeonardSports and over at WagerTalk.com. Brian, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Everybody have a great weekend.
There you go. There's Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com, BLeonardSports on Twitter. And check out those videos and see how Brian dresses up there for him on today's set of recordings. We got one more guest here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hi, Adam. Doing well. How about yourself, sir?
Doing very well, bud. Appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. And we haven't had a whole lot of basketball talk on the show over the last couple of weeks with the NFL playoffs going on and obviously the national championship game as well. We'll get to basketball in a second, but I want to ask you the same question that I've been asking all of our guests here, crowdsourcing some opinions about this. College football season has wrapped up. So as you look back at the season that you had, Wes, in college football, what do you feel like you did really well? What do you feel like was very effective for you this year?
You know, I guess, what I think I did well was, finding some different underdogs and maybe, being able to find different situational spots in certain aspects. I mean, I haven't really had the time to take like a full assessment of it because you're going right into another season. So there's really not a lot of breaks when a season winds down. But learning and I think also learning to that not everything has parity. I mean, the good teams are good teams. And I mean, you know, not being afraid, I guess, in certain aspects to lay a big favorite, even though, you know, that's not what you want to do, I guess, every single week because the odd makers eventually catch up. But I mean, you know, some of these teams, I mean, these teams like Clemson and Alabama, a lot of times these teams get to be big favorites for reasons. And I mean, you saw, you know, ordinarily looking at some of the instincts, your instinct when a team wins a few in a row is to just fade it. And, you know, like when Clemson lays a bunch of big points to Louisville or somebody like that. So, you know, this year I guess I learned to kind of either go with it or stay away from it instead of automatically saying, oh, that's way too many points. Well, I got to take the underdog because that's what I've always done. So, I mean, you know, sometimes you got to learn when to get in front of a team on a streak and, you know, when to stay away and just, you know, pass on the game.
So obviously the flip side here, and again, you'll take more of an assessment of your college football performance as time permits. I mean, it's obviously, like you said, you know, we jump basically now everyone's focus is college basketball. You still have the NFL and the NHL and the NBA going on. So still a lot of things going on here, but you know, in terms of looking at your college football results and thinking back to how the season played out for you, what do you feel like you could have done better or that maybe you'll look to incorporate a little bit more next season?
I think maybe, you know, in terms of like timing, you know, being willing to, you know, play something really early in the week, whether it's Monday and anticipating a move, a line move a little bit quicker, and then at the same time being willing to be patient and not getting involved too early, rather than waiting until the end. I mean, I guess an example would be like the national championship game. You know, if you like the under and you played it right away, you at least probably got a push out of it since it opened around 60. But if you waited and took 59, which wasn't a bad number, considering it went down as low as maybe 56, 56 and a half at certain spots, you know, you lost. So, I mean, you know, it's just kind of, you know, getting more of a knack and I guess learning and anticipating line moves. So, you know, if you have an opinion, I mean, you know, don't wait on it. I mean, I had somebody ask me because I played under 59. That was one of the bets I did lose on the game, but got it back, you know, at least to break even with the second half. But, you know, somebody asked me, oh, don't you think this is going to go up? And it never really did. You know, it never reached that level of 60, what it was when the line came out. So, I mean, you know, I think if you like something, you know, you got to jump on it instead of just always waiting.
All right, let's transition over to the hardwood here. And I want to talk a little bit of NBA with you, Wes, because, you know, one of the things I do a lot of situational handicapping when it comes to the NBA and the NHL, largely because I write the articles over at bangabook.com. And it kind of gives me a starting point, gives me an idea here of what to do with some of these teams. And, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about here lately, and I actually looked at some results here today, it's the dog days of winter. You know, the NBA and the NHL seasons get very monotonous at this point in time because it's just the same old, same old. You know, the good teams are the good teams. The bad teams are the bad teams. You travel to one place in the dark. You leave that place in the dark. You head to another place or you know, you're home with your family or whatever else. The excitement of the start of the season is gone. And the excitement of the playoff chase isn't really there yet. So my thought would be, I would be inclined to look at underdogs in those types of situations. As it turns out here this season so far, underdogs only 21-36 against the spread. Last year they were 110-97-2, looking only at the month of January here. But, you know, Wes, I mean, when you look at the NBA here at this time of the year, what is sort of your starting point? What are you kind of looking for? Here's a lost Wes Reynolds here on the show. We'll have to go ahead and get him back in a couple of seconds here. But again, I do just want to explain real quickly, kind of talking over my words a little bit there. That's 21-36 against the spread for underdogs in the month of January, and then 110-97-2 in the month of January last year, 110-106-4 in 2017, 95-122-5 in 2016. So in terms of looking at underdog performance in the NBA here in the month of January, and, you know, it's good to be able to look back at these results and kind of do some, you know, really for lack of a better term, self myth busting, I think, when it comes to, you know, some of these thoughts that we have, some of these situational angles that we're looking at and considering here, you know, when it comes to the NBA, the NHL, whatever the case may be. We get these narratives in our minds. We get this idea, you know, of how things should be, of what we would expect things to be. And then as you actually look into the results, sometimes that's not going to be the case. And I think that that's something a little bit here as it pertains to the NBA, you know, as I'm kind of looking at where I would think that in the month of January, you know, that that dogs would be a better play. But as it turns out, seems like that may not really be the case here. So, you know, it's one of those things where, again, you're always trying to figure out what matters to you, what can be proven, what can't be proven, something like that. And so I think that when you kind of myth bust some of these things in the NBA or in any sport, really, it's really beneficial for you. So, see if we got Wes back on the line here. Wes, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, good to get you back on the line here. And as I was talking about while you were trying to call back in there, I would have thought that underdogs would be a pretty obvious way to look in the month of January, because you've got people that are transitioning from college football in the NFL to betting the NBA. They're going to want to bet the teams that they can trust. So you'd figure those lines are shaded or inflated a little bit. Seems like overall, you know, that's not really the case. It seems like it's either a pretty even split between dog or favorite, or like this year, the favorites are having a field day.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we talk about tanking, you know, that it's kind of become a little bit of maybe not necessarily a way of life, but it does exist. Now, you know, when you're thinking tanking, you know, it's not like players are just going out there and just necessarily not trying, but you know, some of these teams I think have been made so bad and constructed so badly on purpose that I mean that these teams are going to lose games, and you know, some of them have been worse than others. I mean, like you look at a team like Cleveland, where you're like, okay, they're in a good spot. Now, last night they did come back and backdoor the Pacers, but the Pacers got out to like almost a 30-point lead or something, and you know, they probably let the foot off the gas and knew they had the game in hand. But you know, it is a lot tougher. It has been for me specifically to find those type of spots where you're going to see a favorite kind of you know, seemingly, you know, not necessarily mail it in, but I think, you know, not really have their best effort. I mean, so I think it's been hard to find those spots. And I think, you know, part of it is this is the second year with this schedule starting so early where it doesn't start Halloween or November 1st, where it's starting in the middle of October. You know, the All-Star break, I mean, we're really, with some teams that are halfway through their season, like, you know, the All-Star break should be now, but it's not for another month. And, you know, until after the Super Bowl. So they're playing the bulk of the season like before the All-Star break, instead of, you know, where you know, you have the NHL or you have Major League Baseball, where it's like, okay, at the halfway season, that's when we're going to take the All-Star break. But they're not necessarily doing that here. And, you know, it's thrown a little bit of the dynamic off, and I think the scheduling has made it a little bit harder to find these spots that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it has too. I mean, I did a video over on our YouTube page for Bang the Book yesterday with my Tuesday 3-pack and went 2-1 on those games, had Atlanta in the NBA because that was a bad spot for Toronto, coming off of a lot of big games, and then all of a sudden you're a 2-touchdown favorite against the Hawks. But, you know, I was talking with Kyle Hunter about, you know, going over the plays I wanted to use on the video, and I was looking at Golden State. And Golden State was a 17-point favorite. Now, Golden State has not been a great team covering really big double-digit numbers over the last little while. But New York was wrapping up a 6-game trip. They haven't played a home game since Christmas. They're going back home for a quick stop before they go play in London. I thought it was a horror spot for New York. But you know, laying 17, obviously very difficult to do, even no matter how good Golden State is. But that's the thing, is that in the past, I probably would have fired right away on Golden State. You know, and just be like, you know what, I'm not that worried about the number. I believe this much in the spot. But, you know, by contrast, you mentioned a team like Cleveland. I've lost several times on Cleveland this year thinking, oh, the Cavs are in a really good spot here. You know, playing Indiana in a sandwich spot like last night's was, or, you know, some team that's playing, you know, Boston or Toronto or somebody after them. Ah, Cleveland should be in a good spot here. And then they're just not. And I feel like, you know, the problem is that there are so many teams that are really good and that have to worry about home court advantage and what the importance of that is now, that I think that a lot of coaches are actually able to get through to these guys and say, you know what, all 82 games matter. And I feel like it didn't used to be that way.
No, not at all. And I think that this is a tough part of the season. I mean, I didn't have an NBA play last night, and it's like, you know, it's like I want to put the time into it, but you get so many numbers, and I think the fact that so much of analytics and all that stuff has come in a little bit more to basketball. You know, I think the guys that are probably doing the best in the NBA are really, you know, the numbers guys that put a lot more full time into this. I mean, I know a lot, you know, some guys that are much better in the NBA and don't really do a lot with college basketball. And I just think like the NBA is harder. And I'm like, how do you do it? I mean, but different people have different strengths and weaknesses in their respective ways they do handicapping. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's difficult. I mean, I think that, you know, by and large, I mean, the way that they lay out games for the season, I mean, you know that Tuesday and Thursday nights, they're usually going to have less games. You know, Wednesday is going to be the majority of the teams playing Friday, and then as they go into the weekend, and Thursday night is a small schedule because of the national TV doubleheader on TNT. But, you know, the going back to the scheduling dynamics, you know, I just think that it makes it more difficult. And I know that they've tried to eliminate the back-to-backs. While that's good for the players and good for the organizations and the franchises, it's not as good for us because there's not as many of those, what you would call the traditional NBA spots. There's not as many 4 and 5s and 5s and 7s and back-to-backs with this lengthened schedule and really starting it earlier.
You mentioned something, and again, I mean, this is a topic that we could spend an entire show on. The way to do it now across all sports markets is to be a modeler. It is to be analytics-driven because it's very hard to argue with data. You know, I mean, there's a lot less gray area when it comes to data or modeling or something like that. When you talk about these situational spots, over the long term, are they going to be profitable? Probably. Will they be as profitable as they would have been 10, 15 years ago? Probably not. I don't have the time or the capability or the systems to model everything and put in all of this analytics and all that kind of thing. It's why I think baseball is my best sport, because I've had an intricate knowledge of sabermetrics for over a decade now. I've been applying them for a long time. I know how to interpret the numbers, know how to use them, know what I want to do. But, you know, when it comes to the NBA and the NHL, I mean, I don't have that stuff. I don't have the models. I don't have time to put that stuff together. So I do fall back on the crutch of the situational spots, and they're unquantifiable. There's no absolutes to them. Should they work? Maybe. Do you think they're going to work? Probably. Do they always work? No. And you can, you know, you can value all of these spots differently, whereas if you're handicapping strictly from a data subset, you can't argue with that as much. And it makes the process so much easier because you just look at it and say, okay, my numbers say this, I'm going to play this. But if you don't have that capability, you're doing that situational analysis. It takes a lot of time. It's frustrating for me because I want to be on the cutting edge as much as possible, but I have limitations from a time standpoint, you know, from just an understanding of NBA analytics standpoint. It's hard. And like you said, I think it really is those data savvy types of guys that really are having the most success these days, because the tried and true methods are losing some of their value.
Right. And I'm the same way. I wish I could do that too, but I mean, I don't have the capability. I don't think I'm unintelligent, but I don't have that particular intelligence to, you know how to set up a math model or know how to set up an algorithm that, you know, is going to punch out the numbers, where it makes it a hell of a lot easier to, you know, to find winners or to, you know, kind of did not include certain games and, you know, be able to pass on them and kind of throw them away. You know, I wish that I could do that, but I mean, it's just, you know, that's the thing. I mean, some people have the more time to do that. I know myself lately, I have even less time than I had before. So, I mean, I'm having to try to figure it out, and you're figuring it out as you go along to kind of, you know, see how you can do handicapping, because, I mean, I'm at the point, too, where I'm not in front of a Don Best screen all day, and I can't really monitor these, you know, second by second, minute by minute, hour by hour. So a lot of times I have to get in stuff a little bit earlier. But, I mean, you know, that's all part of it, man, and that's all part of the challenge is you know, being able to find a way to do that. Sometimes, you know, the way you learn lesson is sometimes you lose some bets and you got to lose some games to kind of figure out where your balance and your equilibrium is.
Well, and that's not to say that you have to be a modeler to have success at this, because I know people that have had long-term success that are not modelers. But, you know, it certainly does help to have that level of data. And if you don't have it, like most of our listeners, like you and I, you know, there are still a lot of things you can do in terms of understanding the markets, understanding what drives them, understanding what line moves mean. And then, of course, you know, doing that research and you know, finding those edges, finding the stats that matter to you, the situational spots, all those types of things. It's just that you have to work a lot harder and maybe not as efficiently as some of the modelers. So if you're somebody starting out in this and you really want to be successful at this, I would recommend putting in that time to do the modeling stuff if you have it. If you don't, you know, then use a lot of – you have to compile a lot more things, I think, to really put you over the top on a play. You can't just look at a spot and say, well, this is the fourth road game in 6 days. I'm going to play this automatically. You know, you just use that as one part of the handicap and one part of a much larger process.
Right. And I mean, you know, and we know nowadays in the essence or how, you know, setting lines works now. I mean, it's not like the old days where different guys had different numbers, whether it was based on their action or whether it was based on just the odds maker opinion. Now, a lot of it, there's not a lot of origination. Now, a lot of it is, you know, copy paste with the lines, and you just don't see the line variances. I mean, you know, you're not going to see, I mean, like in college basketball, you're not going to see one book have a total of 145 and another book have a total of 151 on the same game. You're just not going to have that because these odds makers now are interested primarily in limited liability, and, you know, they're not putting as much gamble in the line maybe as they used to.
All right, so let's transition and talk college basketball for a couple of minutes here, because we're deep in the heart of conference play now at this point in time. A lot of teams have played at least two or three conference games. Some of them have played more than that. I think you and I have touched on this before, but, you know, for any of our listeners that missed any episodes or segments during the holidays or anything of that sort, conference play, students are back on campus, so home court advantages go back to normal. Does anything change in your handicapping process right now in college basketball, Wes?
There's a couple things that change, and I actually, interestingly enough, just did a little kind of short basic piece for a site called BetterIQ.com, where you have some guys that have their plays available for purchase, but these are guys that aren't necessarily what I would call pick sellers. These guys are professional bettors that put their cash and back their opinions at the window, but I'm basically writing some content for them, and the first article I wrote, which I'm going to tweet out later today, was about the kind of the different nuances in conference play and what you have to look at. And one useful tool, I think, of looking at that, at least especially early on in the season before the numbers maybe get a little bit tighter as you have more games and as you get into February and March, is that you got to look a little bit, especially not as much with what I would call the Power Six conferences, but as you get to the mid-major, the lower mid-major, and then the lower major conferences, you really want to look at scheduling, the non-conference scheduling in some of these games. I mean, and you can look at anything, you know, whether it's KenPom, whether it's Jeff Sagarin, or any of these other guys that do power ratings, and really looking at the schedule and looking at who these teams are playing. I mean, the most pronounced example is in the SWAC with Texas Southern, and we've talked about them before, you know, when Mike Davis was notorious for doing that. I mean, playing all these road guarantee games, not just for the money, but also for preparing a team for non-conference, because when you've been playing the Oregons and the Gonzagas and the Baylors and the Kentuckys, I mean, this year Texas Southern got wins on the road at Oregon and Baylor and another place. So, I mean, but when you're playing those teams, all of a sudden playing Alcorn State doesn't seem like that much of a challenge. And you know, you have to look, I think, at non-conference scheduling. You have to look at different styles of play. I mean, we know that the style of play, like in the Big Ten, is going to be a little bit more physical than it is maybe in some other conferences. And then looking, you know, one example I found this year with tempo is the Big West has 9 teams, and I believe 6 of the 9 teams rank up in the bottom 50 or 60 in tempo. And then you have a couple outliers with Cal State Northridge and Cal State Fullerton that rank out of 353 some teams that rank, you know, in the top 40 to 50 in tempo that really want to get a lot more up and down. So you're looking at styles of play. You're looking also at new coaches that sometimes it takes a non-conference season for a new coach to get a system in place. Sometimes it even takes a full year because you need to have the personnel. And an example I used in the article was Charlotte, who had been running and gunning and going more up-tempo with Mark Price and then interim coach Houston Fancher. Well, now they have Ron Sanchez, who has spent the last 12 years at Washington State and Virginia under Tony Bennett. So he's trying to instill a pack line and slowing the tempo a little bit more on offense when he has doesn't necessarily have all of his personnel that he and his staff have recruited. So with a team like that, it's probably going to take more than a dozen games in the non-conference to really, you know, to really be able to do that. And that's why people often say a team with a new coach is going to make its most improvement in the second year, because they've had a year to kind of go through the growing pains. So, I mean, styles of play is another factor. I mean, there's the obvious factors that we look at for every game, no matter what time of the season, with injuries or, you know, and then some kids that might get eligible if they're midseason transfers for second semester or they have some kind of academic issues. So really knowing with those teams. But, I mean, I think those are really the factors that you look at, because – the familiarity factor is also another one, because most of these conferences, except, you know, the super conferences where you got, like the ACC, where you got a team from Boston and a team from Miami in the same damn conference, most of these teams, the teams in the conferences, they're near each other in a geographic area. And as you get lower, as you get from the power conferences to the lower conferences, a lot of these schools recruit the same talent. And so they're familiar with each other. So you're not going to see necessarily the talent gap in the Big West. You know, there's not going to be a real big talent gap between like a UC Irvine and a, or something like that. I mean, well, whereas like last night you saw a talent gap, even though they barely covered at the end, they barely covered the closing line. There's a talent gap between Duke and Wake Forest in the ACC, but it's less pronounced in these other conferences. And there's also, you know, the familiarity, but the fact that you play these teams every year, you know what these teams are going to run. You know what to be more prepared for than if you're playing some non-conference team in some random holiday tournament.
One other thing I want to mention there, and you mentioned a lot of great points, but you talk about strength of schedule differences. Really, for the first time I can remember, we've got market-wide numbers for the America East Conference, the Atlantic Sun, the Big South, the MEAC, the SWAC. You know, a lot of times these used to be added games that only some sportsbooks would put up. Now all of the sportsbooks offshore and probably a lot in Vegas putting up all of these numbers. So that's where you can really find some enormous strength of schedule mismatches that, you know, previously didn't matter until the conference tournaments, but now matter in the regular season as well. Wes, I know you got to get going here, so I just want to ask for a couple more minutes looking at the Sony Open in Hawaii out in Honolulu. back-to-back Hawaii events here. We got a good primer on this event yesterday with Brian Blessing and some of the guys that he's looking at for that tournament. Who are some of the guys that you're thinking about for the Sony Open?
Well, one guy I did go back to that I actually played last week, and he finished tied for fourth. So he got there if you're an each way better, or if you're a top five, top 10 guy, was Mark Leishman. And, you know, I know that's actually, knowing Brian, I know Mark Leishman. I don't know if he picked him yesterday, but I know that that's one of the guys he usually kind of gravitates towards. And, you know, he plays well, and he's in a bit of good form. And he's a guy that played a lot of golf in the dog months of winter, played in Australia, went home, and, you know, finished second to finished second with his partner, Cameron Smith, at the World Cup of Golf, and then finished second to him at the Australian PGA, also won in Malaysia. So he's on some good form, really didn't get to make a big move on the weekend. He was too far back, but, you know, he's a guy that I like here. And, you know, this is an event, even though Justin Thomas won it, it's kind of a chalky price at 14-1 a couple years ago, and certainly is the favorite this year. This is an event where you could go a little bit off the radar, and I'm just trying to give a couple guys. I can't give all the guys I played in the essence of time, but one guy I looked at, I liked Sungjae Im, who is around probably 70 or 80-1 now. The kid that won the Web.com to a regular season money list last year and actually started the season finishing first and second because the Web.com tour starts in the Bahamas. And so he's, I think, really adept to playing in some tropical climates. So he was a guy I looked at. I also looked at Oliver Snijdergens at 125-1. Different angle this year. He's got a new caddy on the bag this year, and it's Damon Green, who, if you really follow golf closely, you know that he's been with Zach Johnson for the past 15 years, and they split. And, you know, I think Green thought he needed a break. Zach Johnson thought he needed a more permanent change. But, you know, Zach's a guy that's played really well on this course in the past. So I think that course knowledge could help Ollie here. So I liked him. There were a couple other mid-price guys I liked. Like, I liked Bubba Watson at 40-1, even though he was terrible on the greens last week. But I just think that was more of a numbers thing because, I mean, he went up to 50-1. I mean, last week he was in the 25-30. I mean, that was a smaller field. But, you know, sometimes you get these little overreactions week to week. I mean, you know, you're looking at somebody like Gary Woodland, who played well here in the past but hasn't won. But, you know, he was right there to win last week. And then, you know, now he's like 14 or, you know, he's the same price as Jordan Spieth. And I don't think Gary Woodland is the caliber of player Jordan Spieth is. And, you know, so you get those little market reactions, and that's something I think you want to pay attention to in the course of the season, because when a guy plays well one week, the price immediately gets cut. And it's like you're losing so much value week to week. So that's something I think you should pay attention to.
Well, I like it. Of course, Brian mentioned Sungjae Im yesterday, and we did talk a little bit about Leishman as well. So, you know, hearing some of the same names certainly helps between these two golf segments that we have. Wes Reynolds, you can follow his work on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
No problem. Always good chatting with you.
There you go. There's Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Apologies for that little blip there where he cut out. Hopefully we haven't had too many issues with that here on today's program, but a good segment with Wes. A lot of good talking points there during that. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. Take a look at the four divisional round games with him and also his transition over to the college basketball side with his focus now that college football is wrapped up. And we'll also be joined by Tony George. We'll chat probably some NBA and some college basketball with him. Friday, health permitting, we'll have Kyle Hunter on the program and then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.